if you're a fan of golf, if you're a fan of the Ryder Cup, if you're a fan of Team USA versus Team Euro, you should absolutely check in on the Major Series. It'll be a Peerless Bourbon, single barrel pick. It's almost 6 years old. It's almost around 115 proof. And DM for all the details. It's going to be wonderful. And Jeff, nice work. That's at rockelitebarrelpickers.com. Are you looking forward to football this season? How about the PGA Tour Championship? Maybe you'll be playing a little bit of golf of your own. If you do, don't miss out on Peach State Light, a golden ale brewed with both new and old world grains and hops. It's an easy drinker and refreshing. Do yourself a favor, as our good buddy Jake says, go grab yourself a Peach State Light, the unofficial beer of Georgia. Are you looking forward to tailgate season this fall? How about fall golf tournament season? If you are and you enjoy a drink, and you're looking for the perfect flask to hold your favorite bourbon, go check out our friends at Rag Proper. That's at ragproper.com. It's the original modern flask. What makes this unique, you might ask? Well, it's not metal. It's made of glass. And the chemical inertness, which preserves the flavor and aroma of your bourbon. Outstanding. Do yourself a favor. Go pick yourself up a flask at ragproper.com.
Make more birdies.
A bottle of bourbon, a little glass, and some ice.
This is not a tip. This is a prescription. Trust me. If you don't, you will fall out of balance.
Welcome to Birdies and Bourbon. Sit down and have a sip.
Welcome back to the Birdies and Bourbon Show. Joined by our friend, Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Catoctin Creek Distillery, Dean Kaplan. Dean, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Excited to have you back on. More importantly, I'm going to go ahead and get to it. That way we can talk about some fun stuff. For those of you that are just listening, I'm holding up a release that's going to be hitting the market October 1st, I believe. I'm dating us a little bit, but that's quite all right. It is Catoctin Creek Hot Honey Rye. I did have a chance to get some golf in a week or so ago, Dean, and this was my beverage of choice. It was hard saving enough, so I knew it would be, so I just filled up a flask. Thanks for Ag Proper. Filled up a flask, took it on course, and I'll be damn, man. I said, if you're a fan of, I'm going to call it hot whiskey. This is, you know the label, you know the ball brand, and a lot of people have tried it. A lot of people have, they've gone down this road, and we've had friends of the show that have gone down the hot or cinnamon cinnamon infused, if you will, or hot infused. We're going to let Dean talk about it in just a second, but hell of a job with this one, man. This is good stuff. I was really excited to, what I'm really excited about is to hear about some of the cocktails as we get into this thing. But Dean, for the folks that may not know who you are and may not be familiar with Virginia's rye whiskey, I think I have gotten that right.
You got it. Yeah.
So give us the Dean story.
Yeah. So Catoctin Creek, we're a craft distillery out of Northern Virginia, small town called Percival, about 45 minutes west of DC. Husband and wife team opens up in 2009. So we're creeping up on our 15-year anniversary, which is crazy to think about. And, you know, what we focus on is 100% rye. So, you know, we're focusing on talking about our hot honey, but we've got a range of just straight rye whiskeys called a Roundstone rye at 80, 92, and 116 cask proof. Becky Harris, our president chief distiller, is an amazing distiller, rightly recognized as one of the best distillers in the country. Gal's holding up our Rabble Rouser, which is our bottled and bond, which is super exciting, super small production on that one. Comes out in February for our Founders Day. But yeah, so, you know, what we focus on is really traditional distilling practices, copper pot still distilled by hand using local ingredients. All the grain that we use comes from within 100 miles of that facility in Northern Virginia. For this hot honey rye, all the honey actually comes from within 50 miles of the distillery. So even more local there. We'll talk a little bit more about how that came to be. But we're really, you know, really focused on sharing Virginia rye with the country, right? And we're really excited about where whiskey is going right now. As more and more sort of grain-to-glass distilleries are coming aboard. And so, you know, a word that we don't talk about in spirits very often, which is terroir, right? You hear it in wine all the time. But we don't talk about it in spirits very often because for such a long time post-prohibition, those large multinationals were getting grain from everywhere. And so you don't have a sense of place. And so now that we've got some really cool places that are doing grain to glass, whether it's in the mid-Atlantic, down south, out west, you know, in the Midwest, and they really show that sense of place. And so that's what we do at Catoctin Creek. So even though we are 100% rye, we're in unmalted as well, 100% unmalted rye, we get a warmer, softer, more approachable flavor profile, right? So our entry level 80 proof, I like to say, is a perfect transition rye for those bourbon and Tennessee whiskey drinkers to come into the rye category, right? Because even though there's no corn, we're showing that sweet sort of vanilla. We get a little bit of banana bread on there, which is a really great way to bring people who may have only had Canadian or Midwest rye, which can be a little more vegetal, right? And so, you know, we're really excited to bring our sense of place out to the rest of the country. So we are available in 28 states and 6 international markets through direct distribution. We've got e-commerce where we hit, I believe it's like 45 states right now. So if you go to buyvirginiarye.com, you can buy Catoctin Creek and get it shipped right to your house. So, you know, we're really excited to, you know, showcase what we've got. And then, you know, what we're really focusing on right now is our first new everyday extension in over 7 years. So this hot honey rye is going to be available every day. And, you know, we can hop into that unless you guys have any questions about, you know, who we are before we get into that.
I don't have any questions, I guess a statement. And the one thing that I've so yeah, you mentioned earlier, I held up and maybe I've already had a taste or two of the Rabble Rouser, which is your Bottle and Bond annual release. And I know that's a variation of the whiskey that is the hot honey rye. I think that a lot of folks that have tasted or drinking maybe some other, I'm going to call it flagship. So you correct me on my vernacular if I get too far off base here.
But
some of the flagship, you know, maybe big box brands, if you will, that you're going to find on the shelf. A lot of those are coming or they're flavored neutral grain spirits. And and that is exactly not what you're getting with Catoctin Creek, is which I think is the you've got some of the underlying profiles. So if you're, hey, I don't, and again, you can redirect here, but if it's, hey, I'm not a, I don't drink flavored whiskey or I don't drink flavored liquor. Right. And and that is not the right, after you drink it, after you taste it, and after you've had a chance to drink Catoctin Creek rye whiskey, and then side by side with the hot honey rye, you soon realize that this is not a flavored liquor or a flavored spirit. I would think that it's kind of got more, it's more infused for me with the kind of the layers and the depths and kind of how it hits the palate. Yeah, it's yeah. I don't know. I'll shut up and let you go. You got it.
You hit it right in the head there. And you know what's really funny? So we'll talk about how this even came to be, right? How do we decide that we were going to put hot honey in the bottle, right? So we have a local honey farmer who makes spicy honey. We sell it at the distillery. And he decided to age some of his spicy honey in one of our used whiskey barrels, right? So a nice 30-gallon barrel, aged it in that, took it aside, and then brought the barrel back to us with some, you know, with honey to sell at the distillery. And so Becky said, this might be fun. Let's toss the whiskey back in here and let's see what happens, right? And so as part of our barrel select program for some retailers and at our distillery, we ended up bottling it. And so we did a couple different releases of it at the distillery. We did 82 proof, which is very similar to, you know, what ended up in the bottle here. And then we even did some at cask proof. Now, if you can imagine this experience with that spice and then at 116 proof, it was like rocket fuel, man. It was, you know, I like a little bit of spice and I like heat on my whiskey, but it was quite an experience, let me tell you. Yeah, it was crazy, but people loved it, right? And they sold out in 2 or 3 days. It was amazing. And so when we were talking about, you know, what are we going to do? We're heading into our 15th year. What are we going to do that's sort of going to take that next step? I'm sure as you guys have heard from a lot of people, it's been an interesting year for the spirits industry and whiskey as a whole, right? There's, you know, a lot of uncertainty there. So we're trying to figure out what are we going to do to stand out a little bit. And Becky is a chemical engineer, right? That's her background. She used to make plastics and contact lenses and all that sort of stuff. So she loves to experiment. And we were thinking about it. Said, listen, that hot honey was incredibly popular. But with those barrels, there's no consistency, right? You can't scale with honey barrels because sometimes you get them and there's no honey or it's all, you know, dried. And so Becky said, all right, I'm going to play around with this. And so what she's done is we have a tri-honey blend. So it's three different kinds of honey that go into this. It's buckwheat, clover, and wildflower honeys. She then takes a large vat, like a 55-gallon drum, and heats it up, like big blankets, and heats it up, and then infuses that with habanero chili flakes, right? And she tastes it to make sure she's getting that right spice. That's one of the things that her husband, Scott, gets to help us out with, is making sure it's not too spicy. And then once we've got that, we put our 100% rye whiskey into that and let it steep and infuse, and we keep that warm so all of that you know, melds well, right? So you don't get a whole ton of separation and any of that. And then we filter it out, and just a straight filter, no chill filtration, just filter it out and bottle it at 80 proof. And you know, as you said, Cal, it is not like those entry-level flavored whiskeys that are, you know, flavored neutral spirit that have, you know, added color to them. And there's a place for those, right? There certainly is a place for that. The price point is there. We're going to be, you know, $50 to $55 on the shelf for that. It's not the same experience. But what this does, and as you said, it brings those whiskey drinkers into this category, right? Because it has that backbone. You cannot mistake that it's Catoctin Creek rye whiskey as the base. Right? It's still there. And what I love about it, the honey gives it a really nice full mouthfeel right up front, right? You get really big round mouthfeel. And for me, the spice hits you in the back really well integrated with the rye spice and the alcohol spice.
It does.
So even though it's just 80 proof, the experience is a little bit higher, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll talk cocktails, but I love it. I'm super stoked that we've got this out here. I cannot wait for it to go wide because I think it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be our number one product in a year. I mean, I think it will be our flagship product when we talk a year from now.
I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't. And that's, you know, I said it, you said it, I'll probably say it multiple times, but it's that if you're if you're used to drinking a similar product off the shelf, I don't even know if I can call it similar, but I'm going to call it similar for sake of conversation. And it's just, you just get this all of a sudden. It's, you know, it's like a fresh piece of, think about a fresh piece of big red gum. Like you throw it in your mouth, you chew it, and you get this instant just boom, right? It's just everything is everywhere. And then it's in a few minutes, it's, you know, not even a few minutes, a few chews, then it's gone, right? You just, it's this, absolutely not. I mean, it drinks like it drinks like a rye whiskey. I mean, it's honey, it's sweet, it's coating your mouth. It's, it's my mouth is wet. And then all of a sudden, back of the palate, I get that boom. Those kind of red hots start to come in and then kind of work their way back through my mouth. And then the two start to mix and blend and mingle together. And yeah, really nice job with this thing. So I got some questions on the process. So can you mention the honey farm that this came from?
You know, I don't have that name.
Okay.
Actually.
All right.
There are things that I try to keep so I don't disclose them, right? So I don't even learn them, so I can't even be tortured to let you know who it is.
Well said. Okay, so but that's kind of where the idea came from, and we're getting into this, and it was, I mean, how long is it sitting in a barrel? Is it different for each one? Is there, I mean, are we getting? We've got a blend of three honeys, you said. That we're creating, and this isn't a one-time release. This is something we think we're going to continue to see on the shelf, because I'm drinking batch 23 number one. I don't know what that means, but
that is that year 23 batch number one. Batch number one. So we've already got batch number two flowing out of the warehouse. So, you know, batch number one already hit. It doesn't spend the infusion doesn't spend any time in a barrel, right? So that's just in a neutral tank to infuse the two flavor profiles together. The whiskey itself is our core rye whiskey, which spends about 26 months in those 30-gallon new American oak. So we use either Minnesota or Virginia oak at a level 3 char. And then we take that, and that's what we infuse with this spicy honey mixture there. And it's about a 3 to 4 day infusion process. So it sits in that neutral barrel, heated up again, right? So you're getting that really nice, and we're stirring it and agitating it and making sure it's getting all mixed up really well. And that's the process that then goes into filtering it and then into the bottle. And one thing I failed to mention, I don't know why I keep failing, it was my idea to come up with it. We're also donating $1 for every bottle sold to bee conservation.
Yep.
And, you know, we know that bees are an important part of our ecosystem. And if we're going to be utilizing their byproduct, we might as well give back to make sure they're staying with us.
I know all my neighbors, they have these signs up. It says, stop spraying for mosquitoes. Yep. You're killing the pollinators. Yep. So there you go. I did ask this question once. I can never pronounce it. So this is the open forum. Do you know what the proper name for a beekeeper is?
Oh boy.
You're killing me, Cal, because I should know, because we bought my father-in-law beehive for Father's Day. Ooh, and nice. We went over this, and I used it. That totally, it's like escaping me, but I should know this.
I'm gonna destroy the name. And when I said no punches, these aren't intended to be. I usually say no curveballs. I figure we've talked this much. You know, as I drink, who knows what might come out of my mouth. So I'm gonna screw this up, but I'm gonna try. I think it's pronounced an apiarist.
I think it's apiarist.
Apiarist.
Yes.
And I don't know who we had on it. We were talking with somebody at some point, and they sprung that one on me, and I'm like, I don't know, I think you call him a beekeeper. What else did you call him? I don't. That was dropped on me, and I always like to. I can't lie. I did have to look it up again. I can, because it's a word that you would just never use, and it's very foreign and uncommon. So I'm going to keep sipping on before we do. So Dan, what do you think about, I sent you some over. What are you thinking about Catoctin Creek's hot honey rye?
Outstanding. You know, and we've had some of the other types out there you guys have talked about, of course. And this one is, you know, many levels above, right? And you could just tell the craftsmanship that went into it and then the type of, you know, thought that went into it. Cal, I could see you putting this on pancakes.
As could I was thinking, so same kind of avenue, but I was thinking about like some, I don't know how I would turn this into a glaze, but like a donut glaze and sprinkle with some bacon on top of this thing. I mean, that could be dangerous.
Let me write that down, Cal. I'm stealing that one.
Take it, man.
You know, Cal,
I think it'd be good.
We've talked about it before. I think it's Adam Perry Lang, the, he talks about how you should drink, you know, whiskey, like just like a neat whiskey. You don't need to just sip it like when you're eating a steak or something like that. I can definitely see this as being a compliment to something like that. Or I immediately went to like Nashville with hot chicken. What would this be like with eating hot chicken? Whoa. Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting as well.
That's a good one. Yeah. So we're going to continue to sip on this. But Dean, so I got some other things I want to chat with you about. So first off, By the way, we've had Dean on the show a few times. It's always a pleasure again. Thanks for coming back on. We appreciate it. Love what you guys are doing with Virginia Rye Whiskey. Congratulations. We've had Scott Harris on the show about cocktail extraordinaire. We'll get into some cocktails that you guys are working on with Hot Honey Rye. But congrats to Becky Harris, man. She just got recognized recently, right, at the you'll help me with the name, but the Recognizing Women of Whiskey.
Yeah, she was the Women of Whiskey Symposium. Symposium is what it's called in Kentucky. And she was recognized with the inaugural Legacy Achievement Award. Nice. And it's truly a testament to, you know, to her impact on the industry, right? She, number one, she's the hardest working person I know. I've got the easy job. I get to fly over the country, sell the whiskey that she makes. She's the one doing the hard work, making it happen in this distillery you see pictured behind me. She's the one that makes it happen, right? And, you know, since 2009, she's been our head distiller, right? And if you can imagine what the landscape was 15 years ago, it was a much different space for craft spirits in general. And, you know, a woman leading a craft distillery even more so. So, you know, she's dedicated a lot of her time to help bring up women and underserved communities in the industry. Not only did she sit as president of the American Craft Spirits Association, but she also sits on the board of a nonprofit called the Step Up Foundation, which is created to help bring women and underserved communities into the spirits industry. And so, you know, through her tireless advocacy for, you know, everybody, it is amazing. And it's great to have somebody like that leading our organization. It's awesome to be able to work with somebody like that.
Well, and, you know, just so, you know, folks know, if you don't know what Women of Whiskey does, I mean, Peggy No was there giving out awards. I think Alex Castle, maybe the chair or previous chair, Marianne Eves, has been on. So, I mean, it is literally, quite literally, the Women of Whiskey, past and present, if you will, you know, women that are doing great things with for spirits and putting good booze in the glass, man. I can't say thanks enough.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm going to go down a few different paths here with you. We're going to talk golf at the end of the show, but I don't know, it's supposed to be a booze thing, so we'll talk booze. And we've talked about this before. But give me talk to me a little, because we've had another release with the Ragnar brand label, yeah. I guess you can call it. Tell me a little about that. How's and as you're talking through the Ragnar release, I want you to be thinking about your most unique interaction or experience with the band.
Well, I'll start with that, because I haven't had any, and I'll tell you, I'm not mad about anything about Catoctin Creek. I love working with Scott and Becky and our team, but there's one thing. It was like my third week, I think, at the distillery, right? I had just started. At the time, I was living in Chicago. My first trip down to the distillery, I'm going to meet my new team, you know, all of that. And it's Tuesday morning, right? So I get up at 4:30 to get to O'Hare by 6 so I can be at the distillery, because you lose that hour. And I get to the distillery, you know, by 9:30, and everybody's just dragging. They're all dragging ass. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, Guar was here last night and helped picked out the first batch of Ragnarok. We had a party, you know, it was so much fun. And I said, what are you guys talking? I woke up at 4:30. I could have been here last night, met the band. The only thing I'm frustrated about is 3 weeks. And they're like, we're so sorry. We didn't even think about it. You haven't been with the team long. You know, that is my one thing. But no, they're amazing partners. So yeah, Ragnarok Rye is our collaboration with the rock band Guar. And they came to us. We didn't recruit them. They came to us in the summer of 2020. And everything sucked then, right? Like, we were making hand sanitizer. We hadn't made whiskey. Nobody knew what was going on. And they came to us and said, hey, we want to make a whiskey. You're the Virginia Rye whiskey. We want to make a Virginia whiskey. Let's partner together. And Scott and Becky said, yeah, why not? Right? What could be more fun? So we partnered with them. And we just, at the beginning of August, we launched our third release of the Ragnarok Rye. And this one was a little bit of a deviation from the previous two. So the previous two were our 92 proof, finished with sugar maple and cherry wood. So about a third new oak, a third cherry wood, and a third sugar maple. This year, we incorporated a rum cask finish to it. So it turned out really well. I don't have a bottle of that one on my shelf back there. That's downstairs in the bar. I was drinking that one. The previous two releases each came with one of five collectible pewter toppers. Represent the five band members currently there. Now this year, are either of you guys Guar aficionados?
If you're gonna ask me to name the band members, I won't be able to do that, but I know who they are. I've listened to enough music. And by the way, if you don't know who they are, you should Google G-W-A-R. It's I will say it's a very eclectic group of individuals. I don't know what any of them actually look like outside of their unique costumes that they wear, but it's interesting to say the least.
Absolutely. And if you've got kids, make sure they're not in the car when you put them on.
No reason to have kids around. That's at all. Unless you really don't like them.
Yeah, exactly. But this year is the we're coming up in the 10-year anniversary of David Brockie, who was the original lead singer, of his passing. So this year was a tribute to Odorous Orungus, which was his stage name. And so there's just one topper for this year. And we utilize the artwork that he drew and all of that. We actually cut production back a little bit. So previous release was about 5,000 bottles, and this year we did about 3,500. We know that some of the people were buying for the multiple toppers, so we wanted to, make sure to keep that scarcity there. And it sold out quick. I think at my distillery right now, I think I just got an email from Becky. I think we have something like 15 total bottles, and those are supposed to be going out to bars in Virginia. So a great release for that. It was really, really fun. You should still be able to find it out at retail. There's probably still a lot out there, but in our ecosystem, it's all gone, which is great. Yeah, sure. Yeah. A lot of fun.
I still see it at my my friend's bottle shop across the street. I still see they've got a bottle or two there. I don't know how much they have left, but I see a bottle or two.
But now we got a new distributor down there in Georgia for you, and they're doing great stuff for us. So you should be able to find everything.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool stuff. I love the everything you did with that. I'm actually surprised that I understand, in particular with what you're doing with the partnership, if you will, or a collaboration with Guar. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that there's not some other things that are coming out of Catoctin with a similar play on things, right? I mean, you've got, and I know there's some, we talked earlier, right, about some of the things that I don't see on the shelf and probably won't. Some of the brandies that are such, small limited releases, things along those lines, which is really reason to say it's time to get up to Virginia and go see the Catoctin Creek Distillery, because everything's back on track there, right? I mean, you guys are having is it the Rye Society? Is that the
We've got a Rye Society, which is our VIP membership, and if you do join, you get some really cool benefits at the distillery. You get one. We do some great dinners, so you get a ticket to at least one of those dinners. You get free VIP tours for those, anybody who's watching. You got our beautiful facility behind here. So all of that stuff. It's a beautiful space. It's actually a 100-year-old Buick dealership right downtown Percival. Nice. Really beautiful Art Deco bar. To your point, Cal, as a team, we are fighting to get the Virginia Rye narrative out there, right? And we're doing our best to tell that history of American whiskey starting in Virginia and fighting all those dollars that our friends over at Kentucky have spent, convincing everybody that bourbon is the original American spirit when it's just the one now, not the original. And so, we're really, really hesitant to try to distract from that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the hot honey rye helps us in that way because we can continue that locality and we're not, you know, really taking away from the Virginia aspect. But if we're, you know, starting to look at additional partnerships or other things like that, we're then spreading ourselves too thin, right? We are a really small team. You know, you mentioned the brandies and they're fantastic, man. Our brandies are amazing. They are, we do grape, apple, peach, and pear. All of the fruit there also comes within 50 miles of the distillery, and it's beautiful stuff, but it's super small. And the disruption of our team to have to switch from a brandy run from our rye run, right, is significant. And so I try my best. I've caused some waves in my 3 years that I've been with Catoctin Creek, but I try my best to not cause too many headaches for all my coworkers who are working hard while I'm, you know, doing podcasts and drinking on Monday nights. So,
you know. Not that we're doing that right now, but by the way, if you want to keep up with Dean and find out where he's at, where he's going, you can find him on, I think it's public. I don't, if it's not.
Yeah, then, absolutely. It's out there.
Change your name. But Dean Kaplan, that's D-E-A-N Kaplan, on Instagram. And you usually get a picture of this smiling guy bright and early in the morning, and he's heading to who knows where. One of the states they're allocated or they're distributed in. So let's talk about that. So we've got Catoctin Creek that's approaching. We're coming up on a 15-year anniversary. You'll be approaching a 4-year anniversary soon.
Three-year
anniversary. Yes. And a very interesting time to have those 3 years at a boutique distillery, if you will. Mm-hmm. What's changed over the course of 3 years? And when I say that, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It will be based on your experience at Catoctin, but in the industry, I mean, where do you kind of see things going? Where are they heading? Is it a lot of noise right now in the whiskey world? And a lot of folks are not celebrating their 15th anniversary. A lot of folks are celebrating, 1, 2, 3, 4 year anniversary. So what's that looking like, you know, in your travels to these different markets?
Yeah, you know, one of the most striking things that I've seen within specifically the whiskey space has been the oversaturation of barrel picks, right? So, you know, I've been working on craft spirits for nearly 7 years now, almost 8 years now, right? And I've been in retail my whole life. I mean, I was buying Sazerac barrels in 2010 and 2011, right? I've been doing this a long time. And it used to be 4 or 5 years ago, even up to 3 years ago, if you had a strong barrel select program, you'd get those in and out quickly, right? And retailers would be turning them. And if you as a consumer went to a spot, that barrel would be gone pretty quickly, right? Now, as I'm going across the country, I'm seeing a lot of barrel pick inventory sitting on floors. And I don't know if it's that there's an oversaturation, right? People have taken too many, that consumers are starting to have a little fatigue, right? A lot of those barrels are a homogenous flavor profile, right? So you've got a handful of people that are really supplying the base whiskey for a lot of those picks that have been very popular over the handful of years. And so, you know, that's been really interesting. And I hope, you know, I hope those move because I don't want my retailers sitting on inventory, because when they're sitting on that, they can't buy Catoctin Creek. But what I do hope, and I think is what we're seeing, is I think there's a little bit of a shift in those curious drinkers to find different and interesting flavor profiles, right? And to go out beyond those large brands or those that are sourced, and finding people like us and like a lot of really good people across the country that are doing something themselves and doing it differently. And finding those things, those sort of diamonds in the rough, right? And finding those things. And, you're seeing some, you know, really, really fun stuff pop up all over the country. And there's some really cool regional distilleries. And, you know, if any of them are listening, my advice to anybody is stay regional for as long as you possibly can. You know, that's the other piece. You know, you said lots of people are only celebrating 2, 3, 4, and 5, but some people aren't celebrating anything right now, right? It's a scary time.
Yeah.
And, you know, having been in this industry as long as I have, going too wide too quick is the biggest killer, right? People like me and my team, the sales teams are expensive, right? And they don't turn a profit right away. And so you've gotta be really strategic about it. And it's tough. And I myself am guilty of this every once in a while. We have, you know, something hit a little bit and I get some dollar signs in my eyes and I start putting proposals together and I have to take a week and just take a step back and say, no. Let's grow the right way, right? Let's be low and slow. We don't need to make the big splashes, right? If you've got a great product and you do the right stuff, it'll get out there. And so, you know, that's what I'm seeing. I think the biggest change has been that retailers are a little more skittish, right? They're not bringing more. Shelves aren't getting any bigger. They haven't been getting any bigger for 10 years, right? And there's a new supplier showing up every day. And most of what's out there is really good whiskey, right? Most of what's being presented is really, really good. And so, you know, it's finding those right partners and telling the story the right way and, you know, finding partners like you guys to help get my message out there.
Yeah. I'm just looking at a wall that you can't see that's full of booze over here. And I'm like, there's 6 of those and 7 of those. And I'm like, well, how many of those do I really need? And how many of the, I mean, the needs are not a good, that's not a good way to put it. how many of those do I really want? Right. And to your point, it's, yes, great answers from your side and kind of where it's going and what you're seeing. I'm with you. I don't know the last time that I've walked into a liquor store, regardless of where it was, that they didn't have a barrel pick of something. And if they and if they only have one, that's absolutely the minority, single digit percentages. I mean, almost everybody has multiples, right? And there's the game the business side of things and, you know, the promotional side where you're getting this and you're doing that to get other certain, you know, to other products on the shelf. But I think at some point I do think it's fatigue. I think, and I don't know that it's fatigue necessarily on the business owner as much as it is fatigue on the consumer and me being a consumer. I think it's just that. And I think it's that because no matter what, right? I mean, I think you're always going to have favorites on the menu. And and you're going to like the specials, right? Everybody wants to try the special from time to time. But there are going to be those times where you always, it's like, hey, you know what? I don't want the special. I want to go back to that old faithful on the menu that I know I like and that's going to kind of reset me and put me where I want to be. And I don't know what the end of this looks like. I mean, I know you, I guess the last time we talked, I think you were just starting the whole barrel pick process and that kind of thing and it's up and running now and it's going and is that full on is it we're limiting barrels or like what does that process look like for Catoctin Creek?
Yeah, so you know what we like to do is be really strategic with it. So it is a program that's available, but in a given year we will sell 30 to 40 barrel picks across the country, right? And a majority of those are happening in our home market. Virginia is a tough one just because it's an ABC state. So
legalese things are happening there. Yeah.
Yeah. Our barrels there are going to bars and restaurants, which is difficult, but it's not a focus for my team or my distributors, right? Because for us, what we find is that the barrel pick consumer isn't transitioning to our core items, right? They buy the one barrel pick, and what they're doing is they're more loyal to who's picking the barrel than where the barrels are coming from.
Yep.
And for me, I would rather find a way, you know, and it's great. I love dropping 40 cases at a store, right? That sure. That feels really good. It sure makes my spreadsheet look nice and pretty, yeah. But it's not growing my brand really long term. And because that store may bring in one or two more cases, but they're not going to focus on selling my Roundstone rye or even my Hot Honey rye until those 40 cases are out the door. Right.
Which is interesting because, I mean, that's where we get into when this is, I mean, hell, we should have started with this and we could just keep going for hours. We're not going to make people go through that, but there's a lot of liquor stores around, or mm-hmm. a lot of beverage stores, right? I mean, you don't have to drive very far that you've already happened upon another one. Now, in some of the ABC states, a little bit different. Georgia, which is, you know, you can literally have one almost across the street from the other one. You got lots of options, right? And, you know, I look at this and I think that it's a lot of it is the whole, and albeit they're trying to be fair and they're trying to do the right thing, it's that the whole point system for the allocated shit, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and that's where, and it's like, hey, I know that people are going to buy Jack Daniels when they walk through the door. I know people are going to buy other, you know, top five distillates from, you know, just name the top five regardless. But what I need you to do is I need these to move out the door. I need somebody to go in and buy something, which, and I think it's twofold, right? I mean, it's double-edged because one, I don't know, would I buy a bottle of Catoctin Creek if I just randomly walk into to my friend's bottle shop and I'd never heard of it before? There's a lot of bottles on the shelf. There's a chance I may not even make it to where that bottle is sitting. However, if you've essentially bought an end cap, if you will, mm-hmm. right in the retail market with that barrel pick being there, and if priced accordingly, and if incentivized accordingly by said location, then, you know, that's a conduit. It's interesting to hear you say, though, because I totally get it, that you're the consumer. The consumer is not gravitating or they're not advancing to additional Catoctin labels necessarily. They're just there to buy the barrel pick. And really, they're probably buying a barrel pick, not yours specifically, but any pick, so that they now have an option to buy something down the road when it's sitting on the shelf. And there's only two of them versus there's, you know, 10 cases sitting in the back room, right? And I don't know how the industry gets around that, right? In its current, and this isn't about the three-tier system and all that shit. I'm not going down that road. I'm just saying I don't know, just from a business standpoint, like nobody knows, right? Nobody's been able to figure it out yet. So I don't know what the evolution of that is how do I, other than word of mouth, which is a slow process, I don't mm-hmm. know, you know, what's the path to get to, you know, the how do you usurp that whole transaction that's happening to get it in somebody else's glass?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really, and that is the name of the game. You figure that out, you make yourself $1 billion. So like, let's, you know, offline this and figure it out. But, you know, you're absolutely right. And what I think we're going to see is with these retailers who are the ones utilizing these barrel picks, because you're absolutely right. Right. They're buying my barrel pick or any other barrel pick because, and it's good. Like I know the barrels we put out are fantastic, and we get lots of people on Instagram who, you know, say, hey, I never knew who you were. This stuff's fantastic. I love it. Great. But, you know, on a 240 bottle drop, I'm probably getting five people that do that. Right. Yep. And what I think will happen is, you know, we don't need to have the conversation about the three-tier system and how that all works, but I think the ramifications of what's going to end up happening on that back end, which will change the incentive structure for the retailers, which then will change the incentive structure for the consumers, right? And as we continue to see that sort of change and, you know, quality over brand name recognition, and we start seeing, as I said, those curious drinkers who are looking to go, because, you know, I look at our consumer base in sort of this, you know, fragmented area. You've got collectors, right? So you've got the guys who are only buying to collect, you know, you got that set of consumers. You've got the unicorn.
We
chasers.
Call them flippers, by the way, not collectors.
You don't have to say that.
I'll say that. Yeah.
Then you've got, you know, you've got your, barrel pick drinkers, but they're guys who are buying from a specific set of palettes that they trust and they buy those. Then you have a curious set of drinkers who are going out looking for new things, brands and labels they haven't seen. And then you've got the people who are buying what they like, right? And they buy Jack Daniels, and there's a reason it's the, you know, the leader, right? And, you know, I absolutely love when I go out and I showcase my 80 proof. And yeah. People go, I don't even know why you have an 80 proof whiskey. I said, it's a crowd pleaser. Well, you know, people don't want to buy 80 proof. They go, how much Jameson or how much, you know, Jack Daniels or Jim Beam do you sell?
All the 80 proof right? shit sitting on the shelf right? that people are just gobbling up.
Yeah. It sells like crazy. So you have to reframe it, right? And so it's, for me, when I'm thinking about who do I want to capture, I want to get to be somebody's everyday. Right. I want to be the everyday drinker for them. And so, you know, Hot Honey becomes X. I enter into another set of drinkers. It opens it up to a new group of people that would not have even thought about us. The label's cool and it stands out a little bit more on the shelf as well. It's actually drawn by a former production employee of ours, which is super cool. And, you know, we're with our, you know, campaign on bee conservation and all of that, we're really, really hoping to see that we can capture some hearts and minds that way, because I cannot get that collector or the you know, barrel buyer who's got that palette as their everyday. They're not even looking for everyday, right? They probably, you know, on their everyday, it probably is Jack Daniels. Right. And so, you know, it's trying to find that is what I'm looking for. And that's it's a tough thing. I mean, if I could figure it out again, we'd have $1 billion and we'd move on. Right.
I know my head's spinning. Yeah. I mean, my everyday is it's not even bourbon or whiskey. My everyday is probably a Negroni.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm segueing into something here. Dan, what's your everyday?
It's probably
moonshine
a bourbon.
Doesn't count.
It's probably a bourbon.
Moonshine.
It's a bourbon. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I have a special brand as an everyday one or whatnot. I bounce around. I don't have a set one. Do you have a set one? You don't have a set one either. I'm a Negroni, right?
No,
you said.
I
don't have an everyday.
I
want to.
No. Yeah. If I'm having something, if I said, what do I drink most often? Now I do have some specific things that I drink in the Negroni, but it's usually that cocktail and, or it's probably a cocktail is an everyday, not. And if I'm drinking an everyday, if I'm drinking whiskey or bourbon, it's something new. And, but it's probably also because of what we're doing right now is I want to be able to talk about new things and, you know, and yeah. I don't want to get that fatigue, and I want kind of some exciting things that are coming along and try that are different. The rest of this, what I don't drink tonight, will be enjoyed at Sweetens.
But I think if you look at you, Cal, look at the bottles behind you and the ones you have in front of you and et cetera, and we have similar ones or whatnot, right? And it goes back to Dean's point. It's like, you know, we're not going to drink the same thing every day, but we do trust the people we drink these things from, right? So
yeah, for
sure. I want to try new things from Catoctin. You know, that seems like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I just mixed a little bit of this rabble rouser with what I had left over of the hot honey rye. Holy shit, is that a good? That's good. I'd say it's about a third hot honey rye and two thirds rabble rouser, and that's turned into quite a yummy cocktail. By the way,
I could do the same. I'll have to do that when we get off.
We're gonna talk about some fun stuff. I don't know how long we got you for.
As long as you need. I'm here.
Well, be careful. I mean, I get to the point where I'm falling out of the chair. You never know. which also is entertaining. It's just the camera doesn't follow me down to the floor, and then I got to get. But what about cocktails? So I'm sure Scott Harris, he's got to be whipping up some, and probably yourself as well. But I think Scott, does he still run the cocktail program there?
He certainly does. Yeah. So you know what? I will. I am not a mixologist. My background's retail. I have Scott and the rest of our team are fantastic at that. So you know, we've been seeding this with mixologists around the Mid-Atlantic over the last 2.5 months, right? And we found some really, really cool things. So what I think is going to be our flagship cocktail with this, you know, and again, we'll see how everybody responds, is a spicy riff on a Manhattan called a Manhattan. Ooh, right? So you're gonna take that Catoctin Creek hot honey rye, and then you're gonna use, we're actually using a little bit of Amontillado sherry. So about 2.5 ounces of rye, 1/4 ounce of sherry, 1/4 ounce of vermouth, the sweet vermouth. We like Cocchi Torino, but whatever you got on hand, and a couple dashes of bitters. Right? You're gonna shake, stir it, and then you're gonna strain it into a coupe. It's gonna be fantastic, right?
I'm gonna make one of those as soon as we hang. If this were cordless, Dan won't let me get a cordless one of these because he's like,
he's wandering around too much. See.
He's like, you will never keep your attention over here. That's going in the glass as soon as we get done. So I don't know what sherry I have. I may have to substitute sherry for a brandy or a cognac, but I might do that. And then I think I'm going to use a Punta Mess is what I think I'm going to hit it
with. Yeah, that would absolutely work. Yeah.
Yeah, I think. I've got some interesting bitters. Are y'all getting into the bitter business, by the way?
You know, we have a line. Actually, we're just about to switch who we use for bitters, actually. But we don't make them ourselves. So we have a company that we partner with for a branded line of bitters. Yeah.
Nice.
Gotcha. Oh, Dan, you can probably share that. You can probably share that.
A little recipe card to share with you guys. Yeah.
Yep, I'll take it down.
Yeah, so, you know, the next one, you know, that we really... This is the original. This was Scott's, his one is the next one, the Gold Rush, right? Makes total sense, right? So you got the Gold Rush is just honey, whiskey, lemon, and honey, right? So why, if you already got hot honey, whiskey, add it all together, right? So you've got yourself 2 ounces of the hot honey rye, 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of honey. You're going to shake it all together, stir it over a big cube, garnish with a lemon twist. It's going to be great, right? Now, if you want to take that and heat it up, you're going to have yourself a hot toddy, right? Oh, yeah. So either way, you want to go, like, it's going to go fantastic as it gets cooler. You know, you guys down south, it's going to be a lot later. I think it's going to start snowing in like 2 weeks here in Minnesota. Who knows? but, you know,
if you're lucky, it'll take that long.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going south. But between, I'm going to schedule work in you know, anywhere south of Kentucky starting next month through April, and I'll
well played,
see my wife then. But yeah, so you know, that's gonna be a really nice one as well. Nice and easy, super easy. You should have everything at home to sort of make that one there. And then, you know, the final one that we're highlighting is a riff on an old fashioned, right? So if you've got an opportunity to take that sweet and add a little spice to it, you're going to make it happen. So, you know, 2 ounces of the hot honey rye, 1/2 ounce of simple, 2 dashes of bitters and a cherry. Again, really simple, but really, really tasty. Very easy to make at home. And that's what we want to do. We want to take something, you know, that you can do at your house. Because, you know, if you want something complicated, go out to a bar. They've got all the tools and all the time, and you can pay $15 a cocktail for that.
But
if you just need to do something easy, these are three really nice cocktails that are just really enjoyable.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, love it. And the Manhattan has got my that's happening tonight with I don't know what I'm going to have with it, but maybe some spicy shrimp or something. I think that
would be
well with that. All right, Dean. So we can't keep you all night. I know that. What do we need to close out on for Catoctin Creek and everything's happening with you? And we're going to have, we'll take a few minutes, have some fun. We'll talk. I hear you had an interesting round of golf, but before we get to that, let's close out the Catoctin Creek chat we're having.
Yeah. So, you know, for any information about Catoctin Creek, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, Mastodon, all that stuff, all at Catoctin Creek, Catoctin Creek. You'll find us on every social media platform there. We put all sorts of fun stuff up on all of those. I am not yet. I'm not great at using Blue Sky yet, but I'm gonna put that as part of my process, but mostly Instagram and Facebook and that stuff. If you want to buy Catoctin Creek, buy virginiarye.com. Nice and easy. As I said, we'll ship it to your house right away. The Hot Honey Rye is coming out October 1st. So you should be able to have that in most markets at retail about then, but e-commerce definitely then as well. And we'd love to have you join our mailing list and all of that, learn all our new stuff.
Absolutely.
So I'm not in the know. I'm dating myself. I'm old. Is Blue Sky, is that the same as X? Is that Blue Sky or is Blue Sky so something
completely? It's like the biggest, the newest competitor to X now is what it is. It's
holy shit. Yeah. So we got TikTok and we got Facebook. How long is it going to be before? By the way, go follow Dean Kaplan at Dean Kaplan on Instagram. Fun follow. Yeah. Good guy. He responds to all the nonsense you want to send him. Send him like crazy shit. He'll respond back to it.
Yeah, I certainly will.
He will indeed. How long is it going to be before Facebook is just like obsolete? The reason I say this, think about it, we're all probably of the age that we at least know what MySpace was.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, and that was for me, that was the first real social media platform that I can remember that was truly interactive for whatever, however interactive you want to call it. And I don't even know if you can go on to MySpace anymore. I haven't tried and nor will I. Don't know if it's a thing. If you still have a MySpace account, leave it in drop your MySpace account in the notes. Be great. So how long before Facebook is obsolete? And do you think Blue Sky is going to be the next best thing?
No, I think it's going to be longer than I think any of us want to admit before it goes away. I don't think any of these, you know, just like we were talking about whiskey, changing consumer behavior is really, really hard.
Yeah. Is Blue Sky going to be the next Hot Honey Rye from Catoctin Creek?
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be just a flash in the pan. I don't know. I hate to think that I'm old, but, you know, I'm nearly 40 now. And I'm, you know, like you. You know, I had MySpace, I had AOL Instant Messenger before that, right? I've done all that stuff. And I think I keep up with the times, but I'm not on TikTok. And as a brand, we're not on TikTok. One of the things we're part of a trade organization doesn't allow us because there's no age gating, right? So you can't say, you know, be 21 sense. And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know... I think that Meta ecosystem is going to stick around a little longer than any of us, you know. Instagram's still strong. Threads never really, I think it took off.
To me, that's a Blue Sky. I think it's like,
yeah.
And I got all the prompts that said, oh, do this, oh, do that. And when, yeah. You know, when like or similar, friends, you know, they say, oh, I'm on this now and I'm on that now. Not only did I not gravitate toward, and I'm no social media guru by any means, right? I mean, just go look at some of the shit I post on. It's like, what does this guy got? Like, what do you do to his camera lens? But I guess never, it's, yeah, I think there's, and I get it, that the grass to get something new. I think there's a lot of AI probably built into a lot of these things that are kind of, that are fueling a lot of stuff. And to me, that's when you kind of lose the, you talked about it a lot during our chat, right? So far, it's like that connection, right? That the regional, the, you know, hey, here's who we are. Here's how you get to know people, you know, that kind of thing. And that, I think you lose a lot of that stuff with some of the artificial, and not even artificial, but just if it's not genuine, right? And it's all kind of put together, and it's which is leading me into golf swing scene. And if every video that I showed of my golf swing was just this beautiful, pure, clear, crisp, the bear at Sweetens Cove right now, when he listens to this, he's like going, bullshit, you ain't ever hit a shot like that. ever. Not only that I haven't seen, you've never hit a shot, but I hear that you've had a recent experience this last weekend at a golf course. You told me, I probably wrote it down, but I forget where I wrote it down at. But I think you were up in Minnesota still, right?
Yeah, it was up. So, yeah, I moved up. So this summer I played the most golf I've ever played in my life.
Nice.
It's been amazing. I moved up to Minnesota in the beginning of June from Chicago. In Chicago, it's a pain in the ass to try to play golf, right? If you can get us, you know, you've got to get everything. It's just a pain. And my best friend lives 30 minutes from here in from where I'm at here in Minnesota. And he's a big golfer. So we've been playing quite a bit of golf and he does a great job of, hey, group thread, who's able to play this week, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I got 2 weeks ago, I got my dream, which is a work round, right? So I joined sales early. I've been in this industry forever, but I'm on the sales side early 2020. I took over running the Midwest and I had this vision. I said, all right, great. I'm going to set all these incentives. We're going to hit these big numbers and I'm going to take these guys golfing. Life's going to be good, right? And then the pandemic hit and it took until summer of 2023 for a incentive to finally get paid off on playing golf. So I played golf with my distributor up here in Minnesota and played pretty well. I hit the ball. It felt great. I played a great course out there called Legends, which is just southeast of or southwest of downtown Minneapolis, a beautiful course. And then my buddy goes, all right, we're going to play my favorite course in the Twin Cities called Stone Ridge. And so it's up near the Minnesota Wisconsin border, beautiful area. Go great. Get up there, hit the range. Not feeling great, but I never feel great on the range, right? It's just, you know,
it's a range. It's a range.
Free ball, so I don't feel so bad about it. And I could not string together. Well, no, I could string together four good shots, but it's not in a row, right? So, you know, you're getting to six because you had a good shot, a duff shot, a good shot, a duff shot, and then you're good. I could not put it together, but I hit, you know, how you just need a couple strokes to keep you coming back.
Oh, boy.
And I hit two shots that I still remember that felt amazing, and now I want to get back out there. I could not string together one hole of putting it together at all.
Nice.
It was
bad. The course looks nice. So it's kind of a link setup. It's got all the like the feathery rough and heathery rough, I should say, and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of heathery rough. Lots of some waste bunkers. You know, along the fairways.
Yeah.
Ooh, some really tough greens. I mean, they had some tough pin placements where you know you were on the top of a ridge. And, you know, it seemed like everywhere you went, it was downhill or, you know, uphill, but downhill as soon as you hit the hole. It was, but it was fun.
Yeah, this is a grown-up golf course. This one's, is it public? Stone Ridge?
Yeah. Yeah, it's public. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good-looking track. Yeah, it's,
we had fun. We played the combo blue-whites, about 65, I think is what it was. So, you know, 6,500 yards. So nice day out there. And
did you hit the white barn or did you hit out of the white barn or into the white barn or what happened?
So I was playing so poorly. I asked if I could get two strokes off if I put it through the barn. They wouldn't give that to me, but then my buddy who was playing pretty well did hit the barn. His drive just went smack right in the side. And it's not where you want to be. You are way out of position if you hit that barn. So,
yeah, we get a chance to play this course up in Blue Ridge, Georgia. It's called Otokoa Farm from time to time. And there's, I think it's on the backside. It's a big downhill par five. And over on the right, there's I call it a barn, which I'm calling yours a barn. It's like a watershed or water pump kind of little housing. It covers up. If you hit that thing, you're totally fucked because if you hit it, you hit it and it kicks backwards about 10 yards and you're not far enough back to go over it. Mm-hmm. There's no way to go around it. I mean, it's just a total screw job. And the pin's like, you know, down below. So you get nothing out of that thing. So what about in your travels throughout the year, if you can say, or if you have someone that works with it? So have you had a chance to play any courses while you've been traveling this year?
You know, I'm trying to think if it was this year. This year, not so much. So it's been a crazy year trying to get some stuff put together. So I don't have the extra days that I'd like to have. But I did take a trip down to Texas back in March. It wasn't for work. It was just for fun. We played down in Tyler. I got to pull up the name of the course. It's a great course. It was...
Well, you said Legends, and I'm thinking, like, is it like a Tour 18 kind of thing? But maybe not.
No, I'll have to find it. But they hosted like the 1918 U.S. Open at this course, right?
Okay, cool.
And we didn't stay on, but stayed at an Airbnb sort of 100 yards from the clubhouse. And it was great. Played four courses on the track. It was awesome. You know, early in the year, so it wasn't a great spec in Pine Springs, I think is what it was. But beautiful course, and we had a good time. But no, this year I haven't had an opportunity to do much of it. The move plus some personal travel and getting back to see family. So
is Catoctin allocated in distributed in maybe we could start an allocated thing. I mean, that's what everybody's like.
We could do it. Yeah.
Hot Honey Rye, allocated. Is it allocated in Tennessee?
Yeah, we're in Tennessee.
Well, you got to come to Sweetens at some point. We got to get you to Sweetens Cove and go have do an event there.
It happen.
Yeah, for sure. New clubs in the bag this year. Well, you said you're going to be from this point on. I mean, you're traveling south of the Mason-Dixon so I think we're in good shape here. This could be a thing. New clubs in the bag this year.
Yeah, actually, I stole
Dan's tagline. Dan,
that's all good, man. Yeah, go ahead.
Right before that round in March, I picked up a new set of irons. I picked up Titleist T100Ss.
Nice.
And I'm pretty happy with them, other than last weekend, but pretty happy with them.
Dan?
What was the most fun reaction you've had to this one, the Hot Honey?
Oh, the most fun reaction. That's tough, because we've been really pushing it hard. But I think... it's sort of a group reaction, but we did. So Scott and I went out to Boston to do Whiskeys of the World in Boston. And, you know, as we've talked about, it's been a tough year for everybody. And so launching a new product at this time of the year has been getting a little friction, right? Even though the product's fantastic, everybody's saying, you know, I still got a lot of other stuff sitting in the warehouse. I don't know if I want to bring something else in. Yep. And so Scott and I went to Whiskeys of the World, and I said, listen, I just want to give you a heads up. Don't want to blindside you, but we're going to taste the Hot Honey Rye. I know you said you're kind of on the fence, but let's taste it. And it was the hit of the show. I mean, we had people come in back three or four times. This is what I want to try. But even better, on Monday, my distributor called me and said, hey, I've already got accounts asking for it. Can we get that product set up so we can order it?
That's awesome.
And so that was my best reaction, because it changed the whole state, right? It opened it up for us. And I'm super excited to see that. That was the best for me.
That's insane. That's awesome, man. Yeah, congrats on that.
Yeah. I mean, we got a springboard some way into, if you don't know what it is, you're not looking, I mean, it's again, it's a gateway, right? It's a gateway to...
It is huge, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's all right, here's no curveballs, right? More curveballs. it doesn't have to be the most, but I'm just saying, is there a new location? It doesn't have to be a new location, but is there a memorable spot that you traveled to this year that you ate at? And if so, what was it? Where was it? And what do I get when I go there? Could be anywhere.
Cal, I've had so many good meals this year. That's the scary part. I've had so many good meals. I got to think about what it is.
And you're so thin still. You must be working out.
I'm a runner. That's how I keep saying. That's the only thing I do to keep saying. I'd run about 20 to 25 miles a week. Otherwise, I would lose my mind. Okay. So
I noticed the bike outfit or the bike jersey on Catoctin Creek's website. I think it's like CatoctinCreek.com, I think, is the website.
That's it. And, at My Virginia Rye, you can get to there too.
There you go.
It keeps it easy. Spelling's easier on that one. So best meal. So what did I just had something the other day that was actually, so I'm going to, I'm going to go back. It'll be a little over a year ago, but I'll tell you, and this is the only because it's the meal that has not stopped costing me money. That's why I have to say this.
I like this.
For Christmas last year, my wife and I went to Paris and Brussels.
Oh, nice.
Cashed in miles and upgrades and all this stuff. Again, being on the road all the time, it's the benefit. We were supposed to go see my family in California, and we'd seen a lot of them. And so we looked up flights, and it was like $100 more to fly to Europe than it was to California.
Wow.
So we said, forget it, to Europe instead, right? Yeah. And for Christmas Day brunch, we went to a Michelin-starred Chinese restaurant called Imperial Treasure. And we did their tasting menu at Imperial Treasure in Paris. And let me tell you, it was amazing.
That's awesome.
It was like 10 courses. Service was amazing. The food was awesome. They had this crispy beef with garlic is what it was called. And it was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Wow.
I mean, they gave us like three little cubes of it. And so
yeah, sure.
The two ways that it continued to cost me money. One, my wife loved the silverware, right? This really cool silverware. I'm very good at finding this stuff. I shouldn't have even looked. So we had to buy a whole set of
That'll teach you to show off, Dean.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, no, I can find this. Absolutely. So we bought this whole set of Portuguese silverware that had to get shipped over to our house. And that was, it's amazing, but whatever, it's not, we don't need more silverware. And then this year, we're talking, what are we going to do for our big trip this year, right? We got all these points and miles. And so trying to figure it out. And so for New Year's Eve, we're going to Seoul, South Korea, because there's another Imperial Treasure in Seoul. And so we got to go try it there.
Is it the same place?
Yeah, it's the second location, the same place. So we're going to see if it's the same as it was in Paris.
Dan, do you want to ask the question or should I ask it?
You got to ask it.
Okay. So if you're still listening at this point, this has nothing to do with the brand. This is a personal conversation. So so just tune out if it's offensive. I got to figure it out. So your wife is, yes. Is she of American descent?
Yes.
Mine is not. Mine is South Korean.
Okay.
Which is the reason that I ask. I immediately started thinking, and I know Korean and Chinese food are two completely different things. Trust me, I'm a connoisseur. you went to Paris you had Chinese food. I would totally do it, but
so let me tell you why. Again, we're just having a personal conversation.
Yes, this is personal. So, tune out if you get offended.
I'm Jewish, right? So Christmas doesn't mean anything for me. And so you know the stereotype of you know on Christmas,
rah 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 rah, people, rah 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 rah.
They go to a Chinese food restaurant. Yes. You go see a movie, right? Because
for sure.
That's the only things that are open in most of these towns, right?
Yeah.
So we did the bougie version of that. We went to a Michelin star Chinese food restaurant. Then we went to the ballet in the afternoon.
I love it.
So we just took it up a notch.
Love it.
Nice.
It's
nice.
It's like the bougie version of A Christmas Story.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's great in Paris.
Why not, right?
So good, man.
Awesome.
That's
awesome.
So good.
Good stuff, man.
Now I got things to do when I go to Paris. I know where I'm taking the Korean.
So, there you go.
All right. Well, I'm out on that note. Dan, what else you got for D, man?
He answered everything. No, he did a great job and awesome spirits, man. Good job. And I'm sure this thing's going to take off, like you said. It's awesome. And it's got that that gateway for sure.
Well, great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going to put this up and I'm going to save the probably less than half a bottle that I have left. And I'm going to drink that in the shed at Sweetens when I show up on Thursday, probably. So I don't even know if we'll go glass. We might just go straight out of the bottle for this one. Straight.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, that'll work.
Dean Kaplan, Catoctin Creek. I always screw it. Distillery or spirits? Distillery, right?
Distillery, yeah.
Distillery, yeah. Thanks again for coming on the show, man. We appreciate it. It's always good to see you, brother. And we'll look forward to doing it again.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Cheers.